This also from John's Gospel, chapter 20, in the aftermath of Jesus' death and resurrection. Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus first appeared to the 11. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and place my finger in the mark of the nails, and place my hand in his side, I will not believe." 8 days later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. The doors were shut, but Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not be faithless, but believing." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Fairly or otherwise, and frankly, I think otherwise, Thomas gets lumped in with those sort of nefarious kinds of people that never quite got it right with Jesus and his love and his ministry. You know, Peter in the denial, okay, he got another chance, and Acts of the Apostles sort of, you know, recast his character in a better light. Judas, well, we're certainly not sure about him at all in some ways. And then there's doubting Thomas, which I think is brutally unfair to denigrate him for his doubts. I think he's among the most realistic and, in an odd kind of way, among the best role models we have for discipleship. Because doubt is not the opposite of faith. Doubt is what pushes us in a quest for insight and understanding and truth. It's the doubting and the wondering and the questioning that pushes us forward to seek insight and answers. And once we get them, define our ministry on that basis. I think it's interesting that what Thomas wanted to see was he wanted to see the evidence. "I want to see the evidence of the nail prints. Then I will know." Who doesn't? We all want to see the evidence of what we use to stake our faith, make a decision, teach others. And in Thomas's case, Jesus gives him the evidence of the nail prints. "See my hands. Hold my hand. Place your finger here." I think the evidence of the nail prints is always in the hands. I think it was true for Jesus and Thomas. I think it's true for us. The evidence of the nail prints, first of all, I think is in the hands that combine with tools to produce useful work. We're talking about the exercise of vocation, the exercise of our calling. Hands and tools generate useful work. I no longer have the time, really, or even the means or the tools, but for a while when I was much younger, I learned something of, a smidgen about, the art of woodworking. And one of my favorite things to do in the practicing of that, and literally the practicing, was to take a block of wood about this long and about this square, you know, put it on a lathe, and turn it into, with tools, something useful, a candlestick, a table leg, and so on. It's a process of trial and error, and in some sense, it's violent and dangerous. The lathe spins more slowly at the start, and you take a rather formidable-looking tool called a gouge, and you knock off the square corners, and you make it round but still rough. And then you take another tool and you smooth it out some. And then you take a more refined tool and you make the beads and whatever the decoration is and the candlestick and so on. It takes a long process of both trial and error and constant refining of the task. I think that's true of all useful work. It is something that we start with, learn the rough details, knock off the rough edges, smooth it out, and sooner or later it turns into something that we might call useful, whether it's a block of wood or a painting. You know, I sometimes wonder what Van Gogh did when he was five and where those are. You know, I don't think they had refrigerators in those days, but you know what? You get the idea. And suddenly he's, well, not suddenly, over many years, he's one of the old masters. The process of hands and tools, both learning and turning something into something useful, something insightful, something creative, whether it be a candlestick or a painting or an article or a book, is a process of trial and error and learning. And it's all in the hands. I sometimes use that lathe analogy when I talk to graduate students after they've given me the first draft of their first chapter in their first thesis. Pretty squared up block of wood that needs a lot of work, you know. So I, you know, we go through this, that, and a couple of weeks ago, one of my thesis advisees gave me a sort of middle draft of some of the work that she'd been working on for some time. And I had to knock off some more rough edges and smooth a few things out, and we're having this conversation. And I said, well, here, this works well, this has to be moved here from there. And then I said, and here's where things pretty much fall apart. And then she fell apart. Which brings me to my next point. The evidence of the nail prints is not only in the hands that with tools produce the evidence of our vocation. It's sometimes hands that maybe literally or figuratively or metaphorically sort of wipe away the tears. You know, it had been apparently a very long and traumatic week for this young woman, and I sort of was the last straw, and she just literally fell apart. And she said, I'm so sorry that I'm crying. And I said, don't worry about that. People cry around me all the time. I get that a lot. And in point of fact, that's true. And it's in some respects a high honor to be in the presence of anyone who is feeling that level of emotion that deeply. That's the evidence of the nail prints. The evidence of the nail prints is in our own hands as we wipe away maybe our own tears and so on. I actually learned this in pastoral care class. You know, they actually do teach us the mechanics of doing this kind of work. And I'll never forget this because it seemed to me very odd at first, but then it suddenly made a lot of sense. And it left me with a sense of both trepidation and awe. We were taught, I mean, somebody actually stood in front of us and said, you're making a hospital call, and the person who's in the hospital has an IV, which they often do. I mean, that's why they're in the hospital. And especially if the IV is in the hand, and an IV in the hand is a really treacherous sort of thing. I mean, the vein they put it in is right at the surface, and usually is quite painful. We were taught that if it's possible, and if you can do it with a level of gentleness and care, that when you pray with that person, and we do, and then they cry, if it's possible to gently hold the hand that has the needle in it, you're sending a very powerful message. It's a way of accepting that violation of the self. It's a way of holding gently that pain. There's a kind of physical evidence of emotional empathy. And then, of course, is the big warning. Be very careful. Don't yank on the hand. You know, I mean, just... And I've... You know, you don't contrive this. I mean, and I've done this many times over the years. If I happen to be on that side of the bed, and it happens to be part of the reality, I'll try to do that. And every time I'm thinking, you know, don't overcook this. But it really is a powerful, powerful message in metaphor and in reality that there's the evidence right there of the nail print. And the fact that we have good medicine and good people to care for us in that way and to even accept in a gentle and caring way the reality of having been violated is a powerful witness to the resurrection. The evidence of the nail prints in hands and tools and useful work and in hands that hold and gently care for what has been lost or violated or understands what makes us weep. I think that, well, that nudges us forward and helps us understand the reality of the resurrection and that Jesus is with us. And finally, I think there's evidence of the nail prints in the hands that cradle new life. I had a very poignant conversation with a man many years ago, close to 30 years ago, who was a physician. He was the small town physician. He was the doctor in a town of less than 4,000 people, maybe much less than that, who'd been there about 40 years and had literally brought into life pretty much everybody in town or someone, you know, that was in their family. And I was just passing through that little town, which was a little bit away from where I was, where my church was. I think I'll stop in and see what Dr. So-and-so is up to. And we chatted a little while, and he said, I'm waiting for a phone call from the hospital where I'm going to go deliver my last baby. I'm done with obstetrics. And it made him rather sad, in a way. And this was a woman giving birth to someone he would catch, as he said, when the phone actually rang when I was there. He said, oh, got to go catch the baby. And this was a child that was being given birth by a woman who he had also delivered, as it were. And this was going to be his last one. It's this cradling of new life. There's nothing at all in the world like it. And I've never forgotten, not the details of the story, but the content of the emotion that he attached to the holding of new life. Now, most of us, none of us in this room, you know, get to do it in that way, but we all do cradle new life. I mean, you know, the holding of a child on his or her birthday, and we only get one of those, it's an unforgettable experience, you know. Or even holding the hand of a child, experiencing something for the first time, crossing the street, you know. Or holding the hand of, boy, that cute little junior high girl, that et cetera. You never forget that stuff. Or in any way, taking your hand and someone else's through a passage of something new, whether it be literally new life or simply a new life experience, is, I think, the evidence of nail prints. Because, you know, new life becomes old life, and we know what lies ahead for most of the people who are behind us. You know, I sometimes look in the eyes of my grandkids and go, you know, I wonder what you're going to see when you're my age. You know, and I know what the world was like when I was their age, and it's way different now in so many ways. You go, oh man, you know, it's frightening in a way, but someone will be there to hold their hand, and by that time they'll be holding someone else's hand. Interesting, just little vignette that I think illustrates the essence of what I'm trying to say. Lily, the now 5-year-old, was 2 when her great-grandfather died, and all of the family was gathered in a motel. I don't think it'll ever be the same after we're all invaded, you know. There were about 10 adults and 10 kids in 2 adjoining rooms, and there was pizza, and there was noise, and there were stories, and there was laughter and tears. And into this 2-year-old, someone's holding her hand, comes into the room and is suddenly confused. You know, has never seen a lot of these people. And whoever, I don't remember who brought her into the room. I was sitting on the other side of the room and watched this happen. And whoever it was that had her got distracted and went and did something. And the 2-year-old is standing in the door, kind of looking around. And from about where I am to where Tommy is, she catches my eye. And all I did was go, right there, you know. And I was deeply touched that she would trust me with the hands that held all of the emotion that was in that room. And there was an enormous amount of emotion in that room. And I think that that's what Doubting Thomas was looking for. He was looking for hands that reached out for safety. Hands that communicated acceptance. Hands that, when you need it, show forgiveness. That's the evidence of the nail prints. Where you're accepted, where you're forgiven, where you're safe, it's in the hands. Amen.